All right. We've been overly blessed, unless you just love winter so much that you can't stand what we've been experiencing the last few weeks. But no, it's not cold yet. We've been experiencing 40 degrees on a regular, and all next week is supposed to be like in the 40s. Well, no, I really despise winter. However, we haven't really got winter yet. We got one little snowstorm that lasted, what, a day? Yeah. But we all know winter is coming. And we know that we're going to have to endure it for a while. And that there will be both challenges and joy experiencing it. And whether it's a time we look forward to or one that's we know is full of challenges, we know it's only for a little while. So we're going to talk about seasons here for a moment. If we look outside right now, as we enter this season, the landscape seems to appear lacking in life in a lot of areas, doesn't it? At least compared to what we saw a couple months ago. Yet the grass, the trees, the shrubs are still very much alive. They're just not doing what they were doing 2 months ago. The seasons allow for new growth, a time of development. I think we could maybe call that spring, or liken that to spring. They also allow the sharing of resources to a greater cause. Maturity is shared to benefit beyond oneself. We can call that summer, and we can look at the trees. In the spring, they come out with leaves, and what do those leaves do? They soak in the carbon dioxide and convert it over to oxygen for us. And then they utilize the chlorophyll, as energy to do that with. So summer there. Then seasons give a time of shedding of worn or depleted aspects. A time for pruning or cleansing. We call that fall. And then there's a time of rest and rejuvenation. We can call that winter. I don't know if I'm always at rest when I'm freezing to death. But I do enjoy being under lots of blankets and feeling comfortable that way during winter. Was it been 8 months ago, 9 months ago? Mariah and Xavier moved in with us, and it's been interesting, enjoyable to watch Xavier's transitioning from a toddler to a little boy. And, with that, he's no longer simply inquisitive. Why? But now he's moving into, I want to do that. Give me that. Let me do that. He wants some autonomy of his own. And in our house, on a very regular and unscheduled basis, we have rubber band flights. Flights. And for months, why Xavier would watch these episodes, and he wanted to participate, but about the only thing he could do was go and chase down the rubber bands that had hit the floor somewhere. And then in short order, he learned, you know what, if I take these over to the person that's either most convenient or seems to be the best shot for the moment, I can get them to aim at the target of my choice. So he'd go, Mom, shoot Papa. Or Papa, go shoot Clay. But his fingers just, he would try, but his fingers just couldn't make the rubber bands work. However, in the last couple of weeks, 3 weeks maybe, he is getting, and him and I sat down, because I shoot rubber bands two ways. So I put it over my forefinger and pull back and let go. But I also will take one and I'll wrap it around my pinky, close my pinky, run it around my thumb, put it off my forefinger, and then it looks like a gun, and when I release my pinky, it shoots like a gun. And he would see that, and he was really intrigued by that. So here, a week or so ago, I started teaching him that, and he understands what he needs to do, but his coordination, he still needs to get the pinky working the right way. But the other one, where he just puts it over his forefinger, like this morning, he got me like two or three times. Just a good outright shot. He doesn't have the same velocity behind his shots as some of the others do, but he's learning quickly. And if he before that, if he tried shooting a rubber band, he would shoot himself. It would fall off his forefinger and come back and hit him somehow. But he's beyond that now. But again, in this last month or so, he's putting a lot of effort into learning how to shoot on his own. His target acquisition has improved dramatically. But God created us with those desires to become proficient, to share resources, to be a part of the bigger picture. And one of the questions that believers, young or old, new or well-seasoned, tend to ask on a very regular basis is, what does God want me to do next? What am I supposed to be doing? And there's certainly nothing wrong with asking the question, but the bigger question is, as we receive an answer, are we willing to go through all of the elements that the season is going to have us endure as we realize the answer? Are we going to be willing to go through the growing pains of spring? When Sebastian was somewhere around five years old, for months, he would wake up in the middle of the night screaming, and Lori would have to go in and rub his legs because he was just going through a growth spurt, and his legs were screaming in pain at times in the night. Are we going to be willing to go through the extreme heat of summer? The sunburns, maybe the lack of water. Are we going to be willing to go through the loss of familiar and comforting elements in the fall, in that season? Because even though we understand that the leaves need to drop from the trees, we enjoy having the leaves because they provided shade. We enjoyed the color that they provided. And now we watch them fall. We watch the acorns fall. And then what are we going to be willing to endure the dreariness and the slush of winter? Again, we're going to need to be willing to endure all the aspects so that we can recognize God's answer. Let's turn over to 1 Kings 19 and verse 9. This is talking about Elijah. He's been through a lot as a prophet of God, and he has just been in a long season of fall or winter. And in verse 9, we'll pick it up there. 1 Kings 19 and verse 9, it says, "At that place he came to a cave, and he spent the night there. Then the word of the Lord came to him, saying, 'What are you doing here, Elijah?' And he answered, 'I have been both zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the Israelites have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they are seeking my life to take it away.'" I don't know if Elijah was wanting to give up, but he was in despair. However, he did desire for all of these things to be fixed that he'd been experiencing. And he wanted to be a part, a beneficial part of the solution. But just like many of us, he kind of forgot that, or thought that God was unaware of some of these things. Or maybe that God didn't have a plan, hadn't planned for this. This wasn't supposed to take place. Let's turn back. We'll move out here just momentarily, and then we'll come back to it. Let's go to Proverbs 3 in verse 1. I think this really was in the mind of Elijah, but because of all the doom and gloom he was experiencing, he was starting to question this. Proverbs 3 and verse 1, he says, "My child, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments. For length of days and years of life and abundant welfare they will give you. Do not let loyalty and faithfulness forsake you. Bind them around your neck, write them on the tablet of your heart, so you will find favor and good repute in the sight of God and of people. Trust in the Lord with all of your heart and do not rely on your own insight." So how often do we feel the gloom and despair and forget that God created us for a purpose? That he wants us protected. He wants to provide for us. Proverbs 3 and verse 6, "In all of your ways acknowledge him and he will make straight your paths." Do we go to God with everything and seek his will, his timing, and his blessing, or do we simply seek our own comfort? And then in verse 7, "Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil." Just because something may seem good or beneficial in our eyes, that may not always be the case in God's eyes. We need to consult with him and his plan and see if he has something else in store. Verse 8, "It will be a healing for your flesh and a refreshment for your body." Springtime. "Honor the Lord with your substance and with the first fruits of all of your produce." So giving back or being a steward of all that God has given us is a high priority in his mind. Is it ours also? Then in verse 10, "Then your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will be bursting with wine. My child, do not despise the Lord's discipline or be wary of his reproof. For the Lord reproves the one he loves as a father, the son in whom he delights." Again, God's doesn't want us making the same mistakes over and over. His correction protects us from further huge consequences. So let's go back to Elijah. 1 Kings 19. Pick it up in verse 11. He said, "Go out now," this is God talking to Elijah, "and stand on the mount before the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by." Which is strange, because did Elijah ask for God to just show up in person, in a sense? He said he kind of complained or shared with God what he'd been experiencing, but he didn't ask God to show up. But notice, God decides to just show up in person. "And by now there was a great wind, so strong that it was splitting the mountains and breaking rocks in pieces before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind." Have you ever been in wind so strong that things would be blown in your eyes that would really hurt? You really had to shelter yourself, protect yourself from all the debris that was flying around. This was so strong that it was splitting the mountains and breaking rocks in pieces. "And after the wind, an earthquake." But the Lord was not in the earthquake. Well, most of us probably haven't really experienced an earthquake, huh? But when you talk to some of the people that have experienced some of the big ones, whether or not where they were at ended up being safe or not, it's just terrifying from the standpoint you realize the earth is shaking so much that everything you expect around you should fall down. And then the question is, how many of us, when we experience some of these things, lightning, thunder, the extreme wind, an earthquake, we tend to run and hide, don't we? As soon as those elements seem to be against us, we run and hide. Now, on a physical level, we probably should. We probably shouldn't stand out in the extreme when the tornado is just a couple blocks or a half mile away and we see it coming our direction. We probably should find some shelter. But on a spiritual level, we need to stand firm, just as Elijah did, because Elijah is at the mouth of this cave looking out and seeing all this take place. And it doesn't say that he ran deep into the cave, which if there's an earthquake going on, I don't know if that would have been the smartest thing to do anyhow. But he stood there, he stood firm. What's the verse that we're learning says? Stand fast, right? Even though the circumstances were very uncomfortable in the moment, Elijah chose to stand there. First Kings 19, verse 12, and after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire, and after the fire, a sound of sheer silence. And when Elijah heard it, heard what? The quietness. All of a sudden, it just got quiet. All those other things have been going on, and those are loud things. A large fire is not quiet on any level. Strong winds are not quiet. The earthquake isn't going to be quiet. And all of a sudden, it's just eerily quiet. And when Elijah heard that, the lack of sound, he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. And then came the voice to him that said, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" Again, notice what all Elijah had to withstand before he either could or did hear God's voice. So if we have a desire to hear God, do God's will, we must understand that he is preparing us, that he loves us. He's not placing us into a deadly circumstance, and that his spirit is always placed within our heart, that desire to do his will. And just like Elijah, are we doing everything we can to hear his voice? Are we waiting for that silence to come? But then the quiet voice. In Lamentations 3 and verse 22, says, "The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness." God's faithfulness is going to be new every day towards us. And it's going to challenge us and strengthen us every day. Let's go see what he told Joshua when Joshua is being commissioned to take over the role that Moses had been performing. Joshua 1 and verse 8. God says, "This book of the law shall not depart out of your mouth. You shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to act in accordance with all that is written in it. For then you shall make your way prosperous, and then you shall be successful. I hereby command you, be strong, courageous, do not be frightened or dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." So it doesn't matter what season we're in, what elements we're experiencing. God tells us to be strong and courageous because we should remember, and this is something that's really been on my mind the last several years, is he has set aside for Aaron Baker a number of days of life. And if today is not that number, isn't up, it doesn't matter what happens around me, to me, towards me, that I perceive, that I feel, it doesn't matter. I'm going to live another day because I'm not to the point where God says, nope, your time is over with. So it doesn't matter what's going on around me. There are places that may seem, that may not seem enticing for us at times, but sometimes that's where we need to be. Back to Elijah. Notice God threw a question at him twice. What are you doing here, Elijah? I think that was twofold. First of all, he was asking, are you in the right place? Are you in a place that you can be all that God created you to be? Another thing I think God was asking him, he said, what are you doing here? If it wasn't the place, was it the action? Elijah, what are you doing? Are you doing anything? We can't simply wait for God to finally tell us something. We are to be out doing what we can in the moment. If we're not bumping our noses on closed doors by God, doors that God closed from time to time, are we being lazy? Because to bump on those doors, there's nothing wrong with that. It only becomes wrong if we decide to linger there knowing that it was closed. Let's go to Acts 16, verse 6. And we'll see what Paul and some of the guys experienced in their travels. Acts 16 and verse 6. He says, and they went through the region of Phrygia and Galatia, and having been forbidden by the Holy Spirit to speak the word in Asia. And when they had come opposite Mysia, they attempted to go into Bithynia, but the Spirit of Jesus did not allow them. So passing by Mysia, they went down to Troas. So notice, there's two different locations that they thought they should go to. And in their mind, they probably weren't wrong that that would be a good thing to do. They hadn't experienced God saying, no, don't ever go there. I don't want you over there. I don't want you talking to those people, sharing this gospel, teaching them. They hadn't experienced that in any way. So they weren't going against what God had asked them to do. But for whatever reason, when they started on that route, they bumped into a closed door. God says, no, maybe it wasn't now, maybe it wasn't ever, but for whatever reason, God says, no, I want you someplace else. And after the second one, in verse 9, it says, during the night, Paul had a vision. There stood a man of Macedonia pleading with him and saying, come over to Macedonia and help us. And when he had seen the vision, he immediately tried to cross over to Macedonia, being convinced that God had called us to proclaim the good news to them. He got an answer. I'm sure Paul was asking God, especially after the second stop going down this trail, Paul was asking God along with the others, what is it you want us to do? Why are we blocked from going that direction? And finally, Paul realizes, I just got a very direct response answer from God. So if God's trying to maneuver us to a new location, a new path, in one sense, is our attention truly on Him, or are we being distracted by other things that will get our attention? When we wake up in the morning, is the first thing we do grab our phone to see what we missed since we were last on it? Or do we first take those waking moments to ask God to guide our steps for the rest of the day? If we choose to pick up our phone first, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, if we allow them, we'll command our thoughts, our dreams, our steps, not just for the rest of the day, maybe for the rest of the week, the month, the year. If you feel yourself after going through some of those, feeling some anger, some irritation, some frustration, maybe that's a door that's being closed. God's saying, you're getting the wrong information right now. Because the best we can come out of with the world's idea of information, in the long run, we're going to end up with any of these things: anger, irritation, frustration, or simply a little bit of very quickly passing entertainment, but no value. So how often do we consider God's original intention for us? Why did He create me? What is His plan? What's His kingdom all about? The fact that He's going to restore all things despite our desire for any of the other things. He's going to stick to His plan. So are we a willing participant in the restoration process? Or are we kind of hoping for a delay in that restoration process so that we can get to do something that we've always wanted to? Delay it for our comfort's sake. If we remember back to the garden, you know, Satan wasn't only out to destroy Adam and Eve. More so, he was out to throw as many wrenches as he could into God's plan for humans and the rest of His creation. So something we should ask ourselves from time to time: are we aiding and abetting the enemy even without full desire to do so? Or are we strapping on the armor and have signed up for a lifetime of service on God's side? Another thing we tend to do is we spend more time trying to figure out what God wants us to do next instead of going out and doing what we already know we could or should do. So Paul and his guys, they knew what they were supposed to be doing, and they set out. And God just simply said, nope, not that direction. You're doing what I want you to do, just not that direction. Go over here. However, too often, we don't get up and go do something, or at least what we know we should be doing. We sit back and we wait, hoping that maybe we'll be given an easier task or some way to bypass something that appears to us like it's too big of a challenge. It's the who was sent to Nineveh? Jonah. It's the Jonah syndrome. Oh, I don't want to do that. If I just go hide over here, hopefully this will pass and God will forget all about it. But if we'd put diligent effort into what we know to do, then we will be ready and have an easier time hearing God's next direction for us and feeling that love, that comfort, that peace that comes along with that. So when I say Psalms 119, 105, does that ring a bell without looking yet? But what if I say Thy word is a lamp. Yes. So we know that his word is a lamp to our feet. But how often do we go gravitating towards his word to see where he would have our feet go? Again, we got to wake up in the morning and start a conversation with God. Asking his will for the day and waiting and allowing for his answer in whatever form he chooses to present it. And then, from there, we start our day. We don't just remain in bed, in the bedroom, on the floor, waiting. We've had our conversation. Now we go off. And if he decides to change our direction a little bit, no big deal. And sometimes he'll do that and we'll go, but wait, God. And I've told the story. There was one day that my boss had, set a mandatory meeting. I was being diligent. I was on the way to the meeting. I was going to be a couple minutes early, not real early, but a couple minutes early. And I see a problem alongside the road with a motorist. And I stop to see what's going on and realize I need to be here and help with this for the moment. And so I start asking God, Father, I don't want my boss upset with me. I'm not here to cause him harm, but I think I am supposed to be here, so would you fix that situation? There's nothing I can do about it. Can you fix that situation? And I was there for 15, 20 minutes easily. I show up at work expecting the worst, and when I walk in, my boss isn't there. I said, what's going on? And they said, oh, he got caught up in traffic in Lansing. He'll be here in a few minutes. God fixed it. So here a few years ago, we were in need of another vehicle. And of course, when that comes along, we have desires or wants, about what that vehicle could look like or have with it. But I gotten to the point with my relationship with God. I just knew if I go to him and just start saying, that we're kind of in need of a vehicle in the somewhat near future. Would you start pointing me towards the vehicle you would choose? However, I wouldn't mind if it had this or this or this, or if it was this size or this kind. Lori wanted heated seats. And so I shared all of that with him, and we went down to Florida. One of my thoughts was, I'd like to buy a vehicle that's older to save some money. But that older vehicle, if we go down to Florida to visit my in-laws, we could maybe find one down there that has zero rust on it or very little rust on it. And we're there for about a week, and I've been diligent. I've been on, Marketplace. I've been on, three or four different sites that you can find used vehicles. And at the time, I wanted a pickup truck, somewhat of a specific pickup truck. And we went and looked at several of them. One of them looked like a fantastic deal. Call up the guy. Yep, it's available. It's about a half hour away. We pull up, and there's somebody else looking at it. And they drive off with it. And I've been talking to God, and in that moment, I just said, okay, that was really distinct. I thought I was coming here to buy a vehicle because you'd opened up the doors, and then all of a sudden that was a very closed door. But I didn't look at it like, why were you so mean to me? Why'd you put me through all that? I just said, that means you got something much better in store for me. Okay, now I kind of don't know what to do. Because we'd looked at all the vehicles that I thought I should look at. There was one, however, that had caught my attention very early on, and it was tolerable. In my mind, it was tolerable, but it's not everything I wanted. So I didn't look at it. I didn't call him up, didn't say anything about it. But now I've run through all of my options. So we get back to her parents' place, and I decide, I wonder if I should check, see if that art one is still around. It was. We went and looked at it. It was not quite half the price of the others I'd been looking at, and it's in amazing shape. I negotiated a price, so we got it even lower, and we brought back the Suburban you see us drive on a regular basis. Still no rust on it. It's so I love everything about that vehicle. It is my pickup truck. I can fit a 4x8 sheet of plywood into it, which was one of my goals, but it's entirely protected from the weather. That sheet of plywood can stay in there for 2 or 3 days if I need to, and the rain ain't going to hurt it. All my tools, for the most part, fit in it, or if I need to, I can pull almost anything I want with my Suburban. And on the way to the feast this year, it rolled over 350,000 miles. It's still running great. It's still comfortable to me, but it does have a rod tick that was starting to come in on a regular basis, intermittently. And I realized, okay, at 350,000, this old girl is either going to need to be retired or brought back to life. So I started talking to God about it. And one day I'm looking at YouTube, and up comes this Mark Osborne. I don't know who he is, but he's talking about my vehicle, that very specific, literally, he had an 03 Suburban in his shop, and he's overhauling the engine. And he's talking about how fantastic these engines are, these LS engines that GM made for several years, and that they're well worth, you know, rebuilding. I wonder where this guy's at, because through YouTube, the YouTube video, I felt a comfort in him, like, this guy really knows what he's doing. It sounds like he's been doing it a long time. So I had to do quite a bit of research, because in his video and on his channel, there's almost zero information as to where he's at, how to get a hold of him, or anything like that. But I did some sleuthing, and I found him. I called him up one day and asked him if he still does that. And he says, well, yeah, I do. He says, I am looking to retire here in the next handful of months. What have you got? I told him. He says, I'd do that one. I like working on those. So then I really went to God and I said, Father, if I shouldn't be pursuing this path, will you please block it in any way possible? Because that's the only option I have, to know that I'm either not going to do the wrong thing or make sure I'm doing the right thing. And decided to, I talked with Mark actually way back in June or July. And at that time I told him, I said, well, if I decide to do this, I'm going to do it in the fall, early fall. He says, all right, just give me a call. Well, I called him up here a few weeks ago, and he remembered me. He remembered my story, in a sense. He says, oh, yeah, you're from DeWitt. He says, and you know this, you got this, this. And I was like, well, that's kind of nice to hear, you know. And set an appointment to go down. That morning, on the way down, I said, Father, if I'm not supposed to be doing this, please just block our way. Make me turn around. I'll do that. But if I'm supposed to do this, I'm heading right there, and I'll go through with it unless you stop me. Well, my engine, I got pictures yesterday afternoon. My engine is all out of the Suburban. It's in many pieces on his bench. Some of them have been sent out. And he called me up the other day, and he says, Aaron, he says, hey, your engine actually looks pretty good. He says, we're going to change out these things and leave these other things alone. He says, you'll have a brand new engine when we're done here in a little bit. Let me pick up. I lost my. But one of my thoughts here about a year ago was, if I'm going to retire in the next 4 or 5 years, maybe what I should do is buy either a brand new pickup truck or very close to brand new. And by the time I actually retire in four years or so, it should either mostly be paid off or paid off, And that vehicle then would take me well into retirement before I have to look for another one. That was my thought process. But you know what kept kind of coming to my mind every time I thought about that was a single verse, and I should have wrote it down, I didn't. But God tells us not to be in debt. And for me to go out and buy that new or almost brand new truck, you know, 1 year old, 6 months old, I would be taking out a huge loan. But for some reason, that was still my best plan. But I kept thinking about that. And that was just nagging in the back of my head, like, that's not right. Something's not right here. Something else has to happen. And so when Mark Osborne come along and the opportunity to rebuild my engine, I started feeling very good about it, because, again, I do love my Suburban. It's very comfortable. And if I come across Revelation 3 and verse 7, he says, "And to the angel of the church in Philadelphia write, these are the words of the Holy One, the true One, who has the key of David, who opens and no one will shut, who shuts and no one opens." It's God who opens and closes doors. So are we asking him to open and close doors so that I don't go through the ones he doesn't want me going through, so that I do go through the ones he wants me to go through? Because in Psalms 37, in verse 23, he says, "Our steps are made firm by the Lord when he delights in our way. Though we stumble, we will not fall headlong, for the Lord holds us by the hand." So when I ask God to open or close a door, I'm asking and willingly taking his hand. I want to hold your hand. Guide me through this. There's a lot of times in life when we have a pretty good inkling of what we should do, but then we delay, again, because we're kind of hoping for it to get easier or maybe just to be forgotten about. Health. We know what we should and should not eat, how much we should eat, how little we should eat, but how often do we go, "Oh, this one last package of cookies won't kill me that bad, will it? Or at least not today." What about our finances? How often do we make a purchase simply because it will make us feel good in the moment, but in the long run, it has devastating consequences on our finances? What about our relationships? How we treat them or him, God. How often do we take someone for granted or take advantage of them or do something that hurts them? Not because we really wanted to, but because we were looking out for ourselves first. There's some other things that get in our way when it comes to realizing what God would have us do. We also spend way too much time and energy on listening to the wrong input. Satan and/or society. Just because society says there's nothing wrong with going into debt doesn't mean it's okay to go into debt. What about those common misconceptions? You're not good enough. God wouldn't choose you to do that, take on that responsibility or that role. You need to step aside and let someone else do that, more qualified. There's too much in my past that God wouldn't want me to do that. I'm too old. I'm too weak. My health is a limiting factor. What else gets in the way? Pride. God and only God gets all of the glory all of the time. It was God that gives us the ability, the timing, the opportunity, and the strength. What else gets in the way? Lack of faith. When God wants us to walk through a door he opened, nothing will be able to stop us from walking through that door as long as we start walking through the door. Nothing more can hinder us. It's just like when the Israelites, he parted that sea. As long as they started walking through the sea, nothing was going to stop them. Another thing that gets in the way, so we think, is our health, our age, our lack of experience. Remember the story of the rich young lad that came to Christ? He says, I know your word. I'm doing the best I can with it. What else do I need to do? And how did Christ respond? He says, yeah. Your age is not a factor. Your health isn't a factor. Your finances are not a factor. But let's talk about your faith for just a second. Will you turn over everything and let me be the primary caretaker rather than you? And the rich lad said, I don't know if I can do that. And if his mindset would have been, but wait, you're the one that gave it to me in the first place. You actually could bless me with even more. So yeah, I'll turn it over to you. And again, what about our unforgiveness? God says we cannot offer him sacrifice if we're not reconciled to one another. Matthew 5 and verse 21. You have heard that it was said to those of ancient times, you shall not murder, and whoever murders shall be liable to judgment. But I say to you that if you are angry with a brother or sister, you will be liable to judgment. And if you insult a brother or sister, you will be liable to the council. And if you say fool, you will be liable to the hell of fire. So when you are offering your gift at the altar, if you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother or sister, and then come and offer your gift. So I can't simply go to Lori one evening and say, you know, that thing that so-and-so did to me, I forgive him. Nothing wrong with me telling Lori that I forgive him. But God makes it pretty clear, I'm to go to so-and-so, one-on-one, and clear the air. Doesn't mean that we'll be in complete agreement, but we clear the air between us. It's only when I have spoken directly with so-and-so in a loving manner that then I can approach God and know that he's not only listening, but will respond to me. So again, we've already been given enough insight from God to know what we should and should not be doing. What is our diligence level, and are we in the right place? Are we willing to put forth effort no matter where it takes us? Luke 12 and verse 42. And the Lord said, who then is the faithful and prudent manager whom his master will put in charge of his slaves to give them their allowance of food at the proper time? Blessed is that slave whom his master will find at work when he arrives. Truly, I tell you, he will put that one in charge of all of his possessions. But if that slave says to himself, my master is delayed in coming, and if he begins to beat the other slaves, men and women, and to eat and drink and get drunk, the master of that slave will come on a day when he does not expect him, and in an hour that he does not know, and will cut him to pieces and put him with the unfaithful. So again, it doesn't matter what season we're in or what elements we're going through. God loves us. He's providing for us. He's protecting us, and he's guiding us. Are we seeking that guidance and willing to go through with it? So back to my story about the Suburban. God's blessed us in ways over the last big handful of years that Lori and I know are just truly miraculous. And this past week, another miraculous thing took place. 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I spoke about giving back to God what he requires. We try to be very diligent in doing that. And he tells me that when we do that, that he will open the windows of heaven and pour out a blessing that's immeasurable. I phrase it this way, that when we give him that tithe, that first fruit, that offering, that he takes the remainder after the tithe, the first fruit, or the offering, and blesses it in manner so that it does more than the original. And this week he miraculously blessed me and Lori with enough to take care of my Suburban's overhaul. More than enough. We didn't need it. We didn't ask for that. It's truly just a huge blessing from him. I know this stuff works, and I know many of you have experienced the same thing. Don't forget his blessings. If you need to keep a blessing journal, a miracle journal, I'm not good at journals, so I don't do this. And sadly, I have forgotten some of the blessings, and every now and then I get a little tiny reminder, like, oh yeah, and then this happened too. Psalms 1, verse 1. Happy are those who do not follow the advice of the wicked, or take the path that sinners tread, or sit in the seat of scoffers. But their delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law they meditate day and night. They are like trees planted by the streams of water, which yield their fruit in its season, and their leaves do not wither. In all that they do, they prosper. The wicked are not so, but are like chaff that the wind drives away. Therefore the wicked will not stand in judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord watches over the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. So what will we choose to meditate on? How much effort will we put into it? And what will be our faith in God's plan to restore all things? All of that's going to determine what extent, if any, we are a positive contributor and therefore prosperous.